Hey, Infamous Podcast fam, this is Brian, and as you can tell from my voice, I'm not feeling so well this week. I've actually been sick, so we did not record the episode we intended to do. We had a cover-up where we were going to celebrate Jack Kirby's 100th birthday, just a little bit late, but, you know, talk about Lin-Win passing, or wine, however you say it. You know, we had Hellboy news, we have a ton of Star Wars stuff to talk about. So anyway, we will be back next week with all of that. But right now, we have a special treat. We have the Ohio Toy and Comic Show exclusive episode that we gave out to attendees at that show. So it's a best of disc. It's a lot of fun. And just some highlights of what we've done over the past 2 years. Anyway, so whenever you're listening, you know, thank you. And make sure to follow us on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Check out our Patreon page and give us a review on iTunes, all that good stuff. All right, here is our Ohio Toy and Comic Show exclusive episode. Thanks. Hey guys, this is Brian.
This is Johnny.
And this is the Infamous Podcast. Ohio Toy and Comic Show exclusive best of CD.
I think that's a good way to put it, but sure. I'm not writing that whole thing on the CD.
Just call it the exclusive Toy and Comic Show
episode.
So what we have for you guys here is some clips from some of our favorite episodes that we've done in the past.
Yeah.
Kicking off is an interview we had with actual Aaron Dietrich from the Ohio Toy and Comic Show.
Actual Aaron Dietrich.
Ooh, the Aaron Dietrich. We also have an interview from Christian Colbert. We talk about Avatar The Last Airbender, Captain America Civil War, Voltron Legendary Defender. What
X-Men
else?
X-Men Apocalypse.
X-Men Apocalypse. Stranger Things.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah, we just kind of throw in some of the stuff that we have really enjoyed doing over the last 2 years,
yeah,
actually, that we've been doing this. Yeah. And we hope you guys enjoy this. Thanks for stopping by the booth. Yeah. You got anything you want to add?
It?
I don't know. What else? I mean, what else you want to say?
No, I just, we post new shows every Friday.
Oh, yeah.
So,
derp.
You know, we a little bit of movie reviews, a little bit of comic book talk, you know, a little bit of everything that has to do with the pop culture
Zeitgeist
phenomenons that we are dealing with, a little bit of toy talk and everything else. So,
yeah, so
you know, if you like what you hear, just seek us out. It's infamouspodcast.com.
Yeah, it's really easy to find us. Yeah. Just
we're on
the
Twitter, we're on Instagram. Brian's on everything.
Johnny's on most things.
The Twitter and the Instagram.
We have new episodes every Friday. We have a Patreon page.
Yeah, I forgot about the Patreon page.
You know, if you like what you hear, go subscribe on iTunes or using your favorite podcast app. We're on
5-star reviews are always appreciated.
And if you really like what you do, you guys probably like what you do. But if you like what we do, we have a Patreon page.
Yeah.
The FS Podcast. I know, but just check that out. We have some pretty cool things. If you didn't pick up a shirt, that's one of the things that you can get.
Thanks for picking the CD up.
Yeah.
We appreciate you listening to it or taking the time out to listen to it and that and subscribe.
Awesome. Enjoy.
Thanks.
Hey, welcome to another bonus episode of the Infamous Podcast. I'm Brian.
Johnny.
And we are here in the house of our special guest today. We are on the road. Introduce yourselves.
My name is Aaron Dietrich, and I am putting on the Ohio Toy and Comic Show, and I'm here with my lovely wife.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
And, let's do this,
So
it begins.
All right, so we're up here in lovely, where are we?
Springfield.
We're in the middle of nowhere, Ohio.
Springfield, Ohio. Springfield, Illinois.
No. Where's Homer Simpson? That's what I want.
They don't have a state.
No.
But isn't Springfield, Illinois the Cobra facility?
That, well, I mean, that one
is that
always...
why you live here? Because you guys love Joe so much?
It would
you
make
know,
sense.
When I first met him, I thought that.
Yeah, it would make sense. No, I was born and raised here. my entire life, and I moved to Florida for about 10 years, but I had to come back because of that reason specific. No, I'm just kidding. But no, it works out that way. But yeah,
there's a bunch of bodies floating around in the ocean that got ate partially by sharks in there and moved back to Springfield.
Yeah, I don't do that.
Well, thank you for having us.
Definitely. No, and, thank you for coming.
Thanks for being on the show for sure. So we are here specifically to talk about the Ohio Toy and Comic Show, which is on July 24th.
July 24th, yep, on
and
a Sunday.
It's in Fairborn, Ohio.
Yes, the Holiday Inn, right across the street from Wright State University. That's the easiest way to tell people Sweet. Where it's at. The address is 2800 Presidential Drive. Yeah, it's but like you said, it's hard to tell people Fairborn because no one knows where that is.
No.
Which is why we mentioned the Wright State, but it's essentially across the street from Dayton, Ohio.
Yep.
Like, it's literally Dayton, Ohio if you take 10 steps, apparently. So.
I always say Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Yeah.
That's all you just say. It's up by Wright-Pat.
Yeah. I always say it's up by Wright State, wrong university.
Yeah.
So. Did you go to Wright State?
No.
I did for 2 years. Yeah. And then I moved
to
Florida.
To my rule.
Yep. And you're jealous of him.
Yeah. Anyway, so...
Who went to Wright State and gets to work at home?
I don't know. Whatever. Well, maybe these people will start paying us for our podcast.
No, well, there you go.
It's a subscription-based podcast now.
Come on, guys. Throw some money at them.
No, kidding. All right, so the... our buddy Buzz is going to be there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the toy show... It's just on Saturday, right?
Sunday.
Sunday.
Sunday, yeah, no problem.
I don't know what day it is ever. I'm always like, hey, it's today Thursday.
Yeah. You can show up like, Saturday. The Holiday Inn's got a pool. You can go swim in and then just hang out until Sunday.
I might do that.
Nap in the hallway.
Yeah.
So,
got couches.
Yeah, and you know, if you guys are longtime listeners to the show, which, why aren't you? Hive Villainy will be there, our buddy Buzz. And
yeah, we love him.
Mike's Vintage, our buddy Mike, we went to his
shop
you were right
at
before
his shop,
it opened.
Yeah, which is a fantastic shop.
I think we might head there after we're done with you guys
today.
Yeah.
If he's tell
around.
Him I said hi.
We will. But yeah, it's, I mean, we all love toys. We're sitting here in your home office with, surrounded by... Amazing G.I. Joe statues, Devastator, the guy from Major League over there.
Oh, God.
So, you know, Serrano and his curveball. But yeah, so I guess how did you get into this? Well, first off, how did you get into the toy sales?
Okay.
And then let's talk about the con and the show and how you got into that.
Definitely.
And what goes into planning?
I essentially never grew up, like all of us. I mean,
What's
you know.
Growing up.
I know, the Peter Pan syndrome. It helped a lot growing up. My dad was a rare coin dealer, so he was always going to conventions selling rare coins or buying, trading, doing all that. And essentially coins are very boring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. They are very boring. I mean, my dad loves them. God bless them. But you can only look at it, unless they're like a Power of the Force coin with EV99 on it. I don't want anything to do with it.
This is a 1862 Buffalo nickel with two eyes.
Yeah. but luckily, you know, I was always an action figure toy collector. I always played with them, opened them, tore them apart, blew them up, loved them. Star Wars was always my passion. I grew up playing with my brother's Star Wars figures. I had some of my own. Chewbacca was my favorite.
Nice.
And as I grew up, I got into comic books in the late 80s, early 90s, when I was about, 10 years old, 10 to 12, whatever. And so when I would go to coin shows with my dad, when he would set up, I would bring a short box of comics and a box of like Ninja Turtles, no accessory, just stuff that I didn't want that I would sell for a few bucks a piece. And I'd make 30 bucks and it'd be the best weekend of my life. And that's essentially how I started being 10, 11 years old.
And then your dad took a third of that for
cost. Exactly. It's like someone's got to pay for all that pizza you ate at the show. And, it just went from there where then we would go to bigger shows. My dad, he would sign me up for toy shows. And this is before I could even drive. So he would have to drive me. We'd load up the car with a couple boxes of, vintage Star Wars, G.I. Joe, stuff like that. Just basically it started with my extras. I'd buy collections, piece out what I want, put in my collection and sell, like all of us do. We get an extra stuff. It's like, well, we'll trade, we'll
sell.
Hit
the yard sales.
Exactly.
The flea market.
We came up here with two bags of that stuff.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. So, it spurred from that. And it wasn't until high school when I was driving on my own. And that was, 1995 when Power of the Force 2 had just come out. And that was huge.
Yeah.
I was buying up everything I could. The X-Men toys were still doing well. Spawn was huge. I mean, that was male bulges I couldn't keep in stock. And, you know, just started doing shows on my own and stuff. And it was a way that I didn't have to have a real job. I would just sell toys every few months at a toy show. You know, living with the folks, it wasn't like I had a lot of expenses. And then stopped doing it a couple years when I was in college, just because I'm like, oh, I'm too old for toys, too old for comics. There's girls in my life, blah, blah, blah. There's other things to do. Oh, I know. And then it wasn't really until I was in college for a while and realized I needed to make some extra income.
Right.
And I, you know, I was like, well, I know how to do this. Let me throw some extra stuff on eBay. This is really when I started doing eBay hard and heavy. And it essentially paid for my way through college. Oh, you know, nice. I did eBay. I don't want to say full time, but I mean, when I was in college in Florida, it was, you know, I would do my schoolwork, go home and work eBay 4 hours, literally 4 hours a day, you know, taking photos, posting, collecting the money, shipping it out, all this stuff while putting myself through school. And it was just one of those things. And when I graduated, I had been doing this for so many years that it was just when the recession hit and, you know, jobs were hard to find.
Oh, yeah.
And I, you know, I've got a business degree, minor in communications, and couldn't get a job anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I couldn't even get a job at a local bank. I tried, you know, just to be a teller. But in the time I was searching for a job and I wasn't going to school, when it was done, I basically was doing eBay full time. And I realized I made more money doing that than a real job.
Oh, wow.
You know, it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm doing better this way than if I worked a 9-to-5. And right. I was setting my own hours. Mm-hmm. You know, that was the big thing. And then, you know, I would do toy shows down there as often as I could. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until we moved up here that we turned it into a, like, a real, real business. And started doing toy shows pretty much every week.
Okay.
We're on the road. I mean, anywhere from Ohio, Kentucky, West Virginia, Pittsburgh, Illinois, just everywhere. You know, if it's a 6-hour drive, we'll go.
I was going to say, you go by a 6-hour rule.
That's pretty much a 6-hour rule. Our only exception is for JoeCon, when we'll drive. Pretty much, we'll go to that wherever it is in the country, because we love G.I. Joes so much.
And so for people who don't know, just JoeCon.
JoeCon is the G.I. Joe International Convention that is put on once a year by Fun Publications. And they've got the rights, you know, that they lease it out from Hasbro or whatever, how that works. And it's a huge G.I. Joe convention where, you know, once a year, every G.I. Joe nerd gets together and hangs out in a hotel. And it's the most fun I've ever had. So if you get a chance, go.
Here is our interview with artist Christian Colbert. Enjoy. Christian Colbert, live from the Windy City in Chicago. Christian, how you doing?
I'm pretty good, guys. How are you guys doing?
Doing well. Thanks for coming back on the show. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. Thanks for having me, though.
Yeah. Well, and part of the reason we're having you back is because last time you were on, I said the next time you have something to promote, you have to come back. And lo and behold, you have something to promote.
Well, if I have to come back, I didn't really have a choice now, did I?
Nope, you really didn't. So, you know, that contract that you signed last time requires you to give us exclusives for the rest of your career.
Wow, that's rough. I thought the firstborn child part was a doozy, but...
Well, like, considering you're probably not... No, I'm kidding.
It's not the first one I want. It's the seventh one, the seventh son.
Oh, man.
That's the one I need.
The seventh son of the seventh son.
I don't know. Are you a seventh son, Christian?
No, I'm not.
Well, you're no good to me.
And I don't have any kids either, so I better start working on that.
Yeah, there you go.
So
I'm about seven of them.
Yeah. Like, you've got, what, 7 years? So that's... They don't all have to have the same mom.
This contract's just getting worse and worse. So. It's like the deal that Lando Calrissian made with the Empire. It just keeps getting worse and worse.
So, anyway. All right. Well, hey, anyways, welcome back, man. It's awesome to shoot the shit and chat with you, and you have some really exciting news. You sent over the your new property, Lantern Falls,
the Bible,
the design Bible, and we've been kind of pouring it over here for the last few minutes. Can you tell us, first off, what is Lantern Falls, and then secondly, what is your plan for Lantern Falls?
All right. Well, Lantern Falls is a story. I probably came up with it when I was about 25 or so, and it just kind of sat in my head for another 6 or 7 years. Slowly worked on it, slowly developed it. Finally started writing a script, getting some designs together. I was thinking of pitching it to comic book publishers, but I made a contact at a company called Global Genesis Group, and I pitched it to them, and they loved it immediately. And I'm like, shit, why didn't I do this a lot sooner?
Nice.
Yeah, it's basically a story. It's inspired by everything, all the movies I love from the 80s, like Karate Kid, The Goonies, Lost Boys, Monster Squad, stuff like that. So it's a really fun story.
That's what, when I was looking through the Bible, I'm like, the Corey character looks like David from Lost Boys.
You got it, man.
Yeah. I was like, man, that looks like David.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned Monster Squad, because as I was going through this, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it's very similar.
You're definitely right on track.
Well, even the you didn't read everything, but Corey's group of skaters are the Johnny's group from Karate Kid. I mean, the skeleton faces. I'm like, oh yeah, I recognize the skeleton faces, and they're creepy little looking dudes. So
you've been working on this for what, like the last like 6 or 7 years, you'd say?
I've really only been putting in a lot of work on it in the past 6 to 8 months.
Oh, nice. Okay.
I've been kind of chipping away at it for years and years. The story's evolved and changed over the years. It started as something almost completely different. The main character and his sister were going to be vampire and werewolf hunters. And so it ended up changing. And I finally got this idea. Basically, the story starts with this kid, Dominic, and he's moving to a new city. Doesn't know anybody. He starts to make friends, and he, you know, has a run-in with the local bully, and events lead to the reality being changed into like a Tim Burton-esque Halloween type world, and everybody is turned into a monster or a werewolf or a ghoul or a ghost or something along those lines.
Something supernatural and creepy.
Something supernatural and creepy. Yep.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, this looks great. So, you said you had originally envisioned this as a comic book, but that has changed?
It hasn't permanently changed. I'm still looking into publishers, stuff like that. I still would love to do it as a comic book, but if I can do it as a cartoon or a film instead, then I'm probably just going to do that, because it's just seems like a better way to get the story out there. If I do the comic book, I'm going to be doing it all myself, penciling, inking, coloring, lettering, writing. And for all you guys out there who have ever made a comic book or tried to make a comic book, you know how much work it is. So I just kind of think doing it as a film or a TV series would be a better way to get the story out there.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds awesome. And so how much writing have you done in the past? Because like, I've mainly known you as an artist.
Well, I've always come up with my own stories. I dabble in the writing, but then I get kind of behind on the writing because I'm working on the art. Mm-hmm. I consider myself a writer and an artist. I just happen to be a better artist because that's what I focused on my sure. entire life. But you know, I consider myself, like, if I write this, if this becomes a comic, I'm definitely going to write it myself. There's not going to be anybody else I'm going to bring in,
because this one is mainly your idea. So yeah, it's your idea. I mean,
so technically this is his firstborn, which he owes us.
Right, yeah. Well, there you go. We get all royalties from the animated series that'll be on Nickelodeon in the next year.
No, Netflix. You gotta go for Netflix, man. That's where it's at.
Nickelodeon, Netflix, it's the same.
If you don't know, Avatar is a world divided into four nations: the Water Tribe, the Earth Kingdom, the Fire Nation, and the Air Nomads. I have a typo in there. Each represents a natural element
for which the nation is named. The beginning of the show.
Oh, I should have.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Another funny thing about this is the KBO7, when she was little, and we would watch.
Yeah.
She would act out the entire thing.
The beginning.
And then she'd get to the end, and Katara would be like, "Aang can save the world," and she'd turn and look at us and go, Aang can save the Wo-Wold.
The Wo-Wold.
The Wo-Wold. It was like the cutest thing ever. Anyway, that being said, so it's four nations. It's a world at war. It's at the end of the Hundred Years' War, right. Essentially. The Avatar is an individual who is the master of all four elements.
Right.
And there's one born each generation, essentially.
Yeah, every 30 years.
Well, 30. It just kind of depends. Like
30 to 60 is a generation.
Their life is like, right. Their life expectancy is definitely odd for the planet they're on.
Right.
We'll call it Earth. But anyway, so there's the Water Nation there's the Water Nation that's split into the North and South Pole, or North and South Water Tribes.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Earth Kingdom, which is actually like the largest land mass.
Right.
And then you have the Fire Nation, who are, you know, the imperialists. They're very much about conquering and things like that.
Well, they're the reason the Hundred Years War started.
And then there was the Air Nomads.
Yeah.
Now, Aang is the Avatar, which we find out really early on.
First episode.
Yeah, we find that out before anybody else.
Yeah.
What happens is the Avatar that preceded him, Roku, dies, and the cycle is...
Roku was a Fire Nation.
So the cycle goes fire, earth, water, or fire, air, water, earth.
Right.
And knowing that the next Avatar was going to be an earth or an airbender.
Right.
Fire Lord, Azulon. Right. Yeah. Azulon. I love the names, by the way, in this show. Wipe them out.
Yeah. Literally it was the, if we get rid of them and kill every one of them, then the next one will be.
Right.
You know, actually I think
he was trying to end the Avatar cycle. Yeah. And you know, there's only certain ways that can happen, but we don't really need to get too far into spoilers.
Well, the whole thing, what it is Aang finds out that he's going to be the next Avatar.
Right.
And like a child, you know, he pretty much is upset, mm-hmm. doesn't want to go away, doesn't, you know, he's like, you know, like we've talked about, there's the hero that doesn't want
to
be a hero.
They don't, they're not supposed to tell the Avatar that they're the Avatar until they're 16.
Yeah.
They tell Aang when he's 12.
Right.
Because of what's going on. And
yeah, because he's going to be taken from his master.
Well,
because
he needs to go and learn the other elements. And kind of they need to take him into hiding.
But he panics, mm-hmm. pretty much. He like has a panic attack and gets upset and gets on...
Appa, which is his flying sky bison.
Yeah, and decides that he's going to run away.
Right. So that's one of the other great things about this show. I mean, it's a kid's show.
Right.
Right. But it's very adult. It's very heady.
Yeah.
I love the animals. Right. So it's a flying sky bison.
The crossbreed animals.
Yeah. It's a turtle dove or a turtle duck. You know.
Yeah. There was one that was just that.
Well, there was the Earth King had Bosco the bear.
Yeah.
And he's just a bear. And they're like, not a platypus bear?
Yeah.
Not a lemur bear? Yeah. You know, and it was like, no, he's just a bear. So there is that.
So when Aang runs away, he gets caught in the middle of a storm.
Right.
And literally pretty much puts him and Appa into a carbon freeze.
Like a suspended animation. Yes, he freaks out.
He freaks and freezes them.
And he goes into the Avatar state and they both fall underwater and he freezes them where they're, you know, they're not found for 100 years.
Years, right.
And he's found by a brother and sister, Katara and Sokka.
Mm-hmm.
I love Sokka.
Yeah.
Like Sokka and Zuko are probably my favorite two characters.
Sokka is the everyman.
He is.
Yeah. He literally like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, he's the guy. He's the guy that everybody can go, oh yeah, mm-hmm. I would be that guy.
Right.
And Katara obviously is Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much
because Aang is Lois Lane, Superman,
but she can kind of save herself.
Well,
you know,
Lois Lane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think about
an independent woman, mm-hmm. that can do whatever she wants and still, you know, have the man around.
Johnny just did the Beyonce dance.
Yeah.
All the ladies. Anyway.
But yeah, so they find him. He literally, the ice circle comes floating up.
It's this like ball of ice.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like it was awesome. And they find him and, you know, they don't know who he is.
Right.
They suspect who he is.
Well, no, they, I mean, they.
I think Katara, like, suspects.
Katara might a little bit.
Sokka's not.
Well,
really.
Sokka's oblivious to everything but food.
Right. Yeah.
No, but so the, like I was saying, like, the really neat thing about the show is. It takes from so many things, like you're talking about. It's the reluctant hero.
Yeah.
It's the, you know, the everyman. You have Katara, who is, you know, she wants to be more of the world.
Well, it's, and it's not the whole stay. Thing where Katara is aware that there is a world out there, mm-hmm. and she's stuck in her tribe in the
and
south?
She's trapped. Yeah, she's in the south.
Yeah, so she's in the south. Mom died.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's gone off to war.
Mm-hmm.
The only remnant of an outside world is a battleship that's frozen.
Right.
And it's one of those things where you know there's more out there.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, there's the comparison for her, Ariel.
Yeah.
From Little Mermaid.
Oh, yeah.
You know there's more to the world, mm-hmm. and you want to see it.
And she's got who's its and what's its aplenty.
Well, and it's the thing where I'm independent. Mm-hmm. I can take care of myself.
Right.
Pretty much is her attitude, like, from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, she's taking care of Sokka, too. And I think, is he older than her?
He's her older. No,
I think he's older, but, like, she.
Yeah.
She's the more
she's
mature
the mom.
One.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't have a mom. Your dad's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So Sokka, you know, is missing that dad thing.
And Sokka being the oldest man in the village, or male in the village. Like, because I don't think he's ever a man,
right?
Until
later,
Korra.
Yeah.
But he takes it on himself to be the great protector,
right?
And you know, he's not very good at it.
No,
not like, you know, because he's another one who, like, when they start on their journey, the world wasn't ready for him,
right?
But he sure was ready to, like, pick up and learn as much as he could.
Oh yeah, yeah. He literally adapts. Real fast to what's going on around
the best of them, you know. A lot of my favorite episodes revolve around
them.
You know,
well, he was the guy where you're like, wow, he really knows how to cut a deal and, you know, get into a town and, you know,
yeah,
just,
he can just blend in.
What's going on? Hey, yeah. What's going on here? Yeah,
hey, what's that?
Yeah,
let me try that, you know,
because he didn't have any bending powers at all.
No.
So he was literally just a guy.
And that was the greatest thing about that character is they never gave him a power.
Right.
All right. So this is Brian.
Johnny.
Daryl.
All right. You guys don't know Daryl, but he's our awesome friend. We've referred to him before. He's Black Daryl. Anyway, we just got out of Civil War. Yeah, I always refer to you as that. So I've tried to get Daryl to change his Facebook to Black Daryl Jasper. Anyway, we just got out of Civil War. Daryl, first thoughts?
Loved it. Before this, Winter Soldier was my favorite Marvel movie, closely followed by Guardians of the Galaxy. Civil War is taking that top spot right now.
Nice. J. Johnny Johnnyson?
I don't have, like, a favorite, but this is one of the favorites.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I like the political conspiracy movies, so this one worked right with it.
And I'll tell you one thing, the Russos, they know what they're doing. Infinity War, I know it's a couple years from now, but, you know, Marvel is in good hands with those guys.
So Tom Holland as Spider-Man, first off, nailed it. I told you, there was never a moment where I didn't see Peter Parker. And I've never really been able to say that before on any of the Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah, definitely. And even Marissa Tomei as Aunt May.
Yeah, which, you know, that was a question mark.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, because she's so young, but, like, that was really cool. And then
the interaction between him and Robert Downey Jr. was pretty awesome.
Yep.
The interaction between him and Chris Evans was really awesome.
Yeah.
The best Spider-Man, Peter Parker, that's been on screen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And then Chadwick Boseman.
Oh, yeah.
As Black Panther was amazing, and
glad that I was already sold on it, so it paid off.
Yeah, I was sold on it, but he looked awesome throughout the entire movie. Getting, like, the close-ups of the costume and the fact that he kept a mask on almost the entire time was great. And then just the story, like, as much as we harped on Batman v Superman for not having a story, this was a cohesive story from start to finish.
Yep.
And back to the chat with Boseman, he carried a regality about him that befits someone that's a king.
Oh, yeah. Definitely was, you know, I want to see the Black Panther movie now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, let's skip Doctor Strange and go
Spider-Man
right to the
Spider-Man movie, too.
Oh,
but
dude,
I want to see the Black Panther movie more.
Spidey looked awesome.
Yeah.
The whole interaction with him and Tony was great.
Yeah.
Okay, so just because we'll just do this real quick. So total impression of the movie, and then give it a grade.
What do you want?
A, B, C, or D.
Five shields.
Okay, yeah, we'll do one through five shields. Okay, Daryl, go.
I got it. Five shields. You know, Cap's my favorite comic book character anyway, and you know this movie did him justice.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with five shields.
Yeah, I mean, I'm right there with you with
this.
Five.
I mean, the thing is like now when this comes out, you'll be able to watch Winter Soldier and this, and literally it's gonna be one cohesive movie. Like, it's going to be one epic movie.
Yeah, I mean, it picked up in the final cut scene of Ant-Man, right?
Yeah.
Like, we got that. Yep, and we got the context around it, which made it cool.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, all
right. So this is just kind of our quick one-shot. Johnny and I will be back in a few minutes to, or a few seconds, to talk about our overall thoughts with a spoilery, non-spoilery type review. We don't want to ruin things for people who can't get out to see this.
We have to talk about the fight. At least talk about the airport fight.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Absolutely.
If anything, that's the one major thing that we will talk about.
One of the
about.
Best action pieces I've ever seen in any movie. Not just comic book movies, but any movie.
Yeah.
And I'll say my unabashed man love for Paul Rudd is, like, firmly intact. Okay. So, right. You know, because he was awesome.
Yeah. He was really good.
So, all right. Thank you. Hey, Daryl, thanks for popping on here for us. And we will talk to you guys soon. All right, so this is Brian and Johnny back, pre-recorded, not really live necessarily, but hey, so Johnny,
we're live in your ears.
This is the post.
Yeah,
this is what, 2 days removed?
Well, they just heard our
snapshot,
3-minute review.
Yeah, so and with Daryl, and I'm glad Daryl was able to do that with us. But yeah, okay, so you've had a couple days to sit and think about it.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same? Are you more excited about it?
I almost went and seen it again last night.
I did too.
Yeah.
So I'm going
to
see it at
I
least.
I had to work last night.
Well,
but
yeah.
When I got off of work, I debated on going directly to the theater and seeing it again.
I'm going to see it at least one more time this weekend.
Okay.
At least.
Yeah.
So.
And I'll see it when I'm on vacation in a week and a half. So I'll see it again.
Nice.
Then.
So,
which will probably make it more enjoyable, I think, because I'll have a week where I won't be really thinking about it.
Yeah.
But it was fun.
It was, so one of the things that really stood out to me, and it had nothing to do with the story, and it had nothing to do with the superheroes, it was just
Are we spoiling?
No, this is, we'll do minor.
A little spoiler.
We're not going to, there's some things that I don't think we should spoil because it'll ruin.
We'll just tag it at the beginning. We're tagging it at the beginning right now. Yeah. We might spoil some stuff. So if you haven't seen the movie, don't listen to this.
Yeah.
Listen to the movie.
You know what? I'm guessing if they haven't seen the movie, they're not going to listen to this until after. So we have probably some leeway. But the look of the film, just the filmmaking aesthetic.
Russo brothers know how to shoot a movie.
Dude, and one of my favorite things about it, and it felt very much like the Rushmore movies and Royal Tenenbaums, is when they would go to a different city, and that I got to figure out what font that was.
Oh, the big font.
Just the, you know, Lagos.
Yeah.
Cleveland, you know, it was so cool, and it just kind of
they didn't
added,
go to Cleveland.
They did go to Cleveland.
Did they?
Yeah, that's where the Nazi guy was.
Oh yeah, okay.
So but for me, it just kind of added this. I don't know.
Amazing how Georgia can look like the whole world.
The whole world, but it added. First off, it added like a scope of time to it.
Well, yeah.
And that was one of my big complaints about The Dark Knight, is we didn't know exactly, was it a month, was it a
year?
Oh,
yeah, yeah, because,
you know, this was essentially 4 days.
It spanned seasons, but you didn't know how far along it was. Yeah.
I mean, I would say 4 days. I would say probably the span of the beginning of Civil War to the end is probably a span of 2 weeks.
Maybe not
maybe
even
less.
That.
Maybe
less. Yeah.
Maybe a few days, to be honest. Because, I mean,
the whole thing with...
Tony gets the ultimatum, you have 36 hours at one point. So, and up until
that
point, I
think
maybe
the whole hunt for Winter Soldier was like 4 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, it was literally like hours, not days.
But, so it's just that. That was the thing that stood out to me most as far as just kind of aesthetic and like getting into this
because
world.
Because, I mean, obviously the Russo brothers did Winter Soldier, but Winter Soldier took place in Washington, D.C. Knew you weren't really anywhere else.
They went to Jersey for like a minute.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
But, I mean, it was... they acknowledged that they were at the place that was from the first Captain America movie.
So I just thought they did a really good job. World
spanning.
Yeah.
I mean, they were all over the place.
So, I mean, I'm sure you guys are hearing the excitement in our voices.
Yeah.
And you heard the quick shot. Like, we really thoroughly enjoyed this.
I mean, I made a comment on Joe Caroni.
Yeah.
Said that he's seen it yesterday with his daughter. They enjoyed it. And I said, you know, if when this comes out, and I told you the same thing, when it comes out on Blu-ray, and, you could watch Winter Soldier and this as one big movie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you said it in the quick review, so.
Yeah, I think my comment was that it's the Lawrence of Arabia of our time. The whole voice cast, I mean, with Tyler Labine, Steven Yeun, Bex Taylor.
Yep.
I can't remember. Jeremy Shada is playing Shiro, I think.
And then Rhys Darby is the princess's guy.
Yeah. Which he's comic relief too. So it's like when you get him.
Do you know who he is?
No.
So he's a stand-up comedian.
Okay.
He's hilarious. He's on Out at Midnight a lot. He had a great like guest appearance on Modern Family when they went to Australia.
Okay.
He's just so funny.
Yeah.
Well, and to see him in this role is great because he totally, anytime there's tension, he comes in and says something stupid, but not like stupid. It's just funny.
It's, for him, it's like unintentionally funny because for him, it's something that he's just knows.
He's like, you're not going to eat.
And they're all like, these five guys are from Earth. They don't have any idea what they're dealing with.
And he's quite the warrior in his own right.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Zarkon is Neil Kaplan, who played Megatron at one point on one of the Transformers cartoons. And just the way he does the voice is like, okay. You know, that's cool.
Yeah, I mean, it looks great. Studio Amir did not do Thundercats.
Okay.
But they did do the Guardians of the Galaxy shorts when they did the new Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon for Disney XD. They did the shorts that were on YouTube and stuff. And they did the Boondocks.
Well, it's just a perfect mix of traditional animation and the CG.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The lions and Voltron, I mean, are really pretty awesome.
They're 3D, which is cool.
I love that Honks looks like a truck.
Yeah.
The yellow lion looks like a damn truck.
And that was
truck.
The cool thing. It's like, this is the one that's the most powerful.
Yeah.
And it's slow, but
it's like they all have their different strengths.
I'm a leg.
But as soon as they become Voltron, it's like all the power is just
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it's not just into one, it's into that being that is Voltron. And, you know, the sword is cool.
Yep.
The little getting rid of the little keys in favor of the little gauntlet things is really neat.
The shield off of the wings in the back,
which it makes more sense
more
why they're
thing.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I think the sword was probably KBO7 and I were like, the sword.
But even the creatures.
Yeah.
Like they're all unique looking.
Yeah, well,
but they're based off of somebody that Shiro fought, and because that's literally what they're going after Shiro because they had him as a prisoner, and he was like one of the greatest warriors,
and he's got his Bucky arm, and so I can't say enough good stuff about this, you know.
Yeah, I'm curious to see where it'll go in the second season. I'm kind of hoping they might do the Voltron introduction.
Yeah. Oh. In a time long ago. Actually, you could probably grab that. We could play it.
Right.
So, but you know, it's just really good. Like I didn't expect it to be bad, but
no.
So our buddy David actually got to interview Joaquin DeSantos.
Oh, really?
Who is the executive producer? He directed a lot of Avatar: The Last Airbender episodes. He was a producer on Korra, so he has a lot of experience with Studio Amir. So he actually talked about how they were able to do one whole story.
Yeah.
Which was great because, you know, with Korra, I don't know if you remember how much like changed with Korra.
I didn't get to see the last two seasons.
So,
but there's that. Yeah. You
can
tell
the production of Korra. Korra was supposed to be one season.
Right.
And it did really well.
Right.
And then season two, the first half of season two, because they decided to make it a 54 total episode run.
Right.
Studio Mir wasn't available for the first half of season two of Korra.
And you can tell the difference.
And the artwork is not there. And then they also introduced Unalaq, who is one of the worst villains in the history of animation. He's just bad. Like, not good at all. So, you know, it kind of... Actually, where it turned around was actually an episode, a couple of episodes with Steve Yeun, where we saw Juan, the first Avatar.
Right, yeah.
Which is then Studio Mir came back on board.
Yeah, I think I finished season two, and then I watched like maybe the first two season three episodes.
So, and then season three aired, and it did fine, but they kind of like, it aired intermittent, and then they just like burned them all off. But season three is my favorite, because Henry Rollins as Zaheer is best, one of the best villains ever. And then season four, they just did all digital.
Oh, okay.
And it just aired every like Saturday, or I forget what day of the week it was. Yeah. But like, it just went live on Nickelodeon.
Okay.
And it sucked because they brought it back. If I weren't such a fan and didn't like keep track of the stuff and didn't have like, I had a Korra alert back then.
Right.
I would have missed it. Like, a lot of people just missed it. They didn't know it happened. You know, I mean, David and I like kind of kept each other in the loop of what was going on.
Yeah.
And so it's nice to see these creators who are so good at telling story to get the ability to say, okay, we're going to do all 11, 13 episodes, whatever it is, before it airs.
Right.
So you can tell your entire story.
Well, yeah. And like I said,
and it's all going to go up on the same day.
It's a one arcing story. But each episode is its own story.
So this is how Game of Thrones does it, too. The entire season is shot before it goes live. Like, President Obama gets, like, the whole season, like, the day the first one goes out.
Right.
Because, you know, fair enough. He's president.
President of the United States.
Yeah, that's a perk, man. That's the only reason I'd want to be president, is I get to see Game of Thrones before everybody else.
Oh, the Star Wars movie just finished? I get my copy, right?
Yeah, right here.
You got that Blu-ray ready for me, right?
High Def Digital.
Spaceballs 2? Oh, yeah, I got that.
Blu-ray, speaking of? Yeah. Batman v Superman, crap of crap?
Yeah.
100 gigabyte file.
So what does that mean?
It means if you were to download it, it is 100 gigabytes.
Okay, but like if you're watching it on a Blu-ray player, it won't affect your Blu-ray player.
Let's hope not. But like,
that's what I'm afraid of.
If you have a really old Blu-ray player, it's probably not going to play.
Yeah.
Anyway, but we're talking about Voltron. We're not talking about crap movies by crap hack directors. And David.
Have they announced when the second season's coming?
They have not. I have not seen it. They may have, but
probably San Diego. They'll announce it in San Diego.
We both went and saw X-Men Apocalypse together.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't the plan, but you showed up, which was fun.
I popped in like Nightcrawler.
You bamfed in.
Yeah.
What did you think of the movie?
My name is Kurt Wagner.
Kurt Wagner.
Yes.
What did you think of the movie?
I enjoyed it.
I did too.
Not my favorite, but I enjoyed it.
No, again, I agree with you there. I thought... It definitely had some problems.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
There were some pacing
issues. The length?
You know, I was shocked at how long it was.
Put it to you this way. Captain America is a long movie. Civil War is a long movie.
It didn't feel long.
It doesn't feel long. This actually felt long.
It did not feel long like Batman v Superman.
No. It didn't feel that long. But the thing with with X-Men... Compared to Batman versus Superman, there was stuff I could laugh at in Batman versus Superman. Where this was just, I needed to pay attention to the story because there was a lot of story.
There was, and that's where the pacing like kind of failed the movie.
Let me put it to you this way, and this is going to be a little spoilerific because there's things that I was thinking about. And I wish that when Bryan Singer did the opening with Sabinor, that it would have been like The Mummy. Type opening where it would have had a voiceover.
Yeah.
And it would have been really fast paced and quick.
Yeah.
And that would have been it.
It
dragged out. It really dragged out.
The whole thing with, I mean, the opening is brutal.
Yeah.
It's like
everybody dies.
His initial four horsemen
were
brutal. And then the way they bought it was even more brutal. Yeah, I thought yeah, that
scene
went
on. Yeah, don't take little
on.
Kids to see that. That
no.
Yeah.
Because the KB07 was like, hey, I want to go see X-Men. I'm like, no.
No. No just this because one's not of the opening.
I think I told her, I said, when it's on video, you'll be able to watch it because you don't have to watch that part. It's like the Under the Red Hood animated.
Yeah.
She's never seen the beginning because she doesn't need to watch Robin get beaten.
Right.
Spoiler.
Robin got beat to death?
Sorry.
Wow.
Anyway,
Dick Grayson or
no, Jason Todd.
Who?
Anyway,
vote now.
die 1-900. I called. Like I got permission from my parents to call, and I want my.
I wasn't even the comic books during that period. Yeah, Star Wars comics. That was about it. Yeah.
So I was. It was Batman, Spider-Man, Green Lantern. So
okay,
but and then it was just Green Lantern, Spider-Man for a long time. But anyway.
It's amazing that as a kid I was more of a Marvel fan, and as a teenager I was more of a DC fan. As an adult, I like all of them.
Yeah. All right. So that initial scene where like they were destroying the temple around him,
it was the whole thing where it was like it was the obvious story,
but like, it was they like kept showing those
what
like,
was it 20 minutes?
Yeah. So but they kept showing the like the big blocks.
Oh yeah, the blocks. Pillars. It's like.
I
only
need
to show
see,
that after
I didn't
the
need to see
beginning.
Seven of those.
Yeah.
I needed one.
Yeah.
Maybe two, but like I didn't need seven. You know, and then the whole thing
the
with,
collapsing of the temple, if you showed what it started out with,
yeah.
And then the temple collapsing, totally would make sense. Mm-hmm. And that would have trimmed off like 4 minutes.
At least.
Yeah.
Maybe 14.
Yeah.
Like
I said, Mummy Returns opening would have been perfect on that.
So I have a question. Do you look at this as a sequel to Days of Future Past or First Class?
This is a sequel to Days of Future Past.
See, I came in looking at this as a sequel to, and I understand all the Days of Future Past stuff that happened.
Right.
I look at this as the direct sequel to First Class that the Days of Future Past stuff influenced.
Explain.
So... All right, so Mystique is mm-hmm. now, you know, a known thing, right?
Yeah.
She saved the world.
She's
the savior of mutanity.
Yeah.
Whatever they call it, mutant life. Mutant kind, thank you.
Says like, the X-Men fan.
It. So, but what happens there, right?
Yeah.
Say this is an alternate timeline.
Yeah.
Because it is, right? Because she didn't kill Bolivar Trask.
Right.
The things that happened in there, it's like the two Martys, right? Like, that timeline affected this one. You know, there's no Rachel Gray, Rachel Summers, whatever, you know, that the time travel's not really, like, a huge thing right now with the X-Men.
Because it's too difficult.
And it is. But at the same time, I look at, so... You know, with Havoc coming back in. Because Havoc had such a small role in Days of Future Past. Just at the beginning there in Vietnam.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you forgot about it.
Yeah.
But to have him come...
Sorry, because him and Banshee, I get mixed up. Because those two were very similar in First Class. But Banshee's dead by Days of Future Past.
Yeah. So...
Yeah.
You know, so you have all that. Which is killing Sean Cassidy. How do you do that?
Yeah.
So, there's no leprechauns now.
Well, Belasco and...
Yeah.
Because Belasco in the comic book was the one that got with Mystique, and that's who the parentage of Nightcrawler is.
Azazel, yeah.
Yeah.
So
Azazel, Belasco, you know.
Sorry.
They're same character, different name.
But we don't know that that didn't happen, because, like, when she... In Days of Future Past, when she's... So, anyway. Like, I understand that. I think the outcome of Days of Future Past allowed this version to take hold, but I still look at it as the sequel to...
Are you talking like the X-Men universe of X-Men, X-United, X-Men Last Stand?
No, because those movies didn't happen now.
Well, right, but you're talking that Days of the Future Past is a direct sequel to those.
Yes.
Okay.
So... Because now, like, Wolverine can't show up, and they're all like, who is this guy? Because Gene and Scott and Kurt, who is now an original X-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the only thing we were missing at the end there was Colossus to have the giant size team.
Well, right. You were hoping for Colossus that shows up in Deadpool, but younger.
Yeah. I was almost disappointed that he didn't show up. But he could very easily
I think that was just they didn't think about that type thing.
I think they did a great job showing how convoluted the X-Men story is.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, just running with it.
Right.
But no, Ty Sheridan was great.
Yeah.
Sophie Turner was great.
Yeah.
I don't know who played Nightcrawler, but he was great.
Oh, it was Cody Smith McPhee from, what was it, Let the Right One In?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Yeah.
The Magneto stuff was straight out of the comic.
Yeah. They took it in a different generation, but it was the same story.
So, yeah. I think...
Probably the most heartbreaking part of the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Man. So,
I would have liked to seen his daughter become an X-Men.
Right.
She controlled animals.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
That was very cool.
Yeah.
You know, so I think, you know, where the pacing kind of, where things, they kind of just threw in these, like, tentpole, like, oh crap moments, right?
Yeah.
Like, Quicksilver saving everyone in the school. Wow, that was awesome to watch.
It's the things it with Quicksilver are, like, the best effects-driven scenes ever.
So let's get into Stranger Things.
Sure.
So Stranger Things is American science fiction supernatural horror television series created by the Duffer Brothers. It was written and directed by the pilot, and a good chunk of the series was
written. Yeah, they wrote a good amount of episodes.
And they directed a good amount, too.
Yeah.
Matt and Ross Duffer, with the executive produced by Sean Levy, who I know that name, but I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know offhand.
And
it's very familiar.
It's not like I'm sitting in front of a computer where I can't look it up or anything.
Yeah, you ever heard of the Internet Movie Database?
Yeah. So, as Jay and Miles call it, Dr. Internet to the rescue.
Yeah.
Oh, he did Cheaper by the Dozen, Pink Panther, Night at the Museum movies.
Okay.
Big Fat Liar. we talked about a Frankie Muniz movie earlier. That's right.
He directed all those?
Yep.
Okay.
So the interesting thing about this show is it's set in 1980s Indiana, where a young boy vanishes mysteriously, and then a telekinetic young girl shows up to help his friends try and find him.
Yeah.
It came out on July 15th, so about a week ago.
Last Friday, yeah.
And, and it's had glowing reviews for its characterization, its pacing, its atmosphere, the acting, and just the homage to 1980s Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, you tore through this in a day.
Yeah.
I watched... It took me 3 tries to get through the first episode.
Okay.
One night I did start watching like way later than I should have and just kind of sacked out. The next day I just couldn't, I just wasn't paying any attention, so I turned it off.
Right.
Then I watched the first and second and most of the third episode in one sitting.
Okay.
And I remember I didn't text you, I texted a different friend and said, hey, when does this get good?
You text me.
Did I text you that?
Yeah, you texted
me. So I texted someone else that too. But so here's the thing is I don't hate this series.
Okay.
And in a lot of ways, I don't even dislike it. But I am not utterly in love with this show.
You're not a horror fan either.
Well,
so.
You know,
a lot
of
this is horror.
Here's the thing, though. The supernatural aspect of this show.
Yeah.
Like the is right up my alley. The four kids.
Yeah.
You know, Mike and Toothless and Lucas. And 11, right? If they would have spent 95% of the episode on them looking for Will and 5% on the adult stuff and cut out the teenagers, I would be over the moon about this show. Those, and I'm putting Will in this category. Those five kids were the best thing about this show.
You think so?
I think... and especially 11, who
I thought the kids were really good.
She was played by a young lady named Miley Bobby Brown, which is the best name ever. She was fantastic. She did more with her eyes than, you know, most adult actors can do with their entire body.
Right.
She was great. Like, man, like she's like Chloe Moretz. when she was Hit Girl the first time around.
Yeah.
And we're all like, yeah, man, this is awesome. It reminded me of that. It reminded me of Drew Barrymore in Firestarter a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't see the correlation to the Goonies until probably episode 6.
Yeah.
And by then it felt like it was too late.
I didn't know there was supposed to be a correlation.
Yeah, people were like, well, because they're like, oh, it's like the Goonies. Like, so for me,
To me, it felt more like this was a bad version of E.T. Like E.T. gone wrong.
Yeah.
And that, because without those flying kids bikes. reminded me of Elliot and his brother and his friends more than anything. And it was like, you know, the teenage tie to it was like kind of the E.T. thing too.
Right.
And then Winona Ryder as Will's mom, I was like, man, she's like, you haven't seen her around a lot lately.
Well, she took a break from Hollywood. Yeah. So.
But I mean, she was really good. I thought she played that kind of mom really good.
So, and I understand the choices she made as that kind of mom, because that's what a mom or parent would do. But there was a point where, you know, it was the get out. And she got out of the house, right? And she got in her car and she started to drive away. And then she turned around and went right back in the house. And it's like, why?
Well, that was the whole thing.
Every white lady does in every horror movie.
Yeah, I think it was more for that. It was, you know, this is the answer to what's going on with my son.
Yeah.
He was the one telling her to get out.
And he
was.
It's
like, you know, and she's like, hell no, I'm going to fight, you know.
So in the thing going through the, trying to come through the wall, like, was it the Langoliers or, no, it was the Frighteners.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you know, like it had that. I'll say this.
That's been that
it's happened.
That
a
trope's
lot,
used a lot in horror movies.
The show looked great.
Yeah.
Just the look and feel of the show was great. It was the '80s, everyone was smoking, you know.
Yeah.
The music was fantastic.
Yeah, that opening music's like pretty awesome.
That and then just the music that they used and you know, the popular culture music of the time.
Right.
Should I stay or should I go now? Is, you know, is the theme, like the unofficial theme song of this series. I what was saved the show for me was the last two episodes.
Okay.
I feel like, and I'm not spoiling anything, but I feel like the finale was so satisfying.
Yeah.
Because it very easily is the series finale.
Yeah.
And it's very easily to kind of open the door and come back in.
Yeah.
Or it opens the door for like another place,
another story,
you know, another story that's still dealing with these. Now, Matthew Modine is in this movie or in this TV series.
Yeah.
I think in total, he says maybe 100 words.
Yeah. He's playing the cigarette smoking man from X-Files type character.
I took him more as a hipster Colonel Sanders without the beard.
Okay.
Like, cause his hair is white. Like he just, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
I don't
like, I felt like he was wasted, especially because, like, if you look on the, like, the Netflix, like, list of characters, he's number two.
Well, I mean, but the stories with him and Eleven and why she's afraid of him, it kind of all, like,
and again,
fits.
That didn't come until,
like,
the
you know,
end.
That's not a,
right,
you know. But, I mean, it was the whole thing of the mystery of his character, and that was kind of what you were like. It's kind of like,
See, the mystery of Eleven's character was more important than the mystery of his character.
Well, yeah, I mean,
and he was just a plot device.
Yeah,
for
he's a plot device, but he's kind of like Keys was in E.T.
Okay, yeah.
Keys was just at the beginning was just the Keys. You didn't even see the actor,
until
the last part of the movie, and then he's just there.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I mean, Peter Coyote is like a really good actor, but in that movie, he's, you know, got a few minutes of lines, and it's like, okay.
The Infest Podcast is recorded in Kings Mills, Ohio, just north of Cincinnati. You can find new episodes every Friday on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, our website, or anywhere podcasts are downloaded. This show is hosted by Johnny Podorf and me, Brian Tudor. Those amazing banners that go with our show notes, those are designed by Johnny, and the show is mixed and engineered by me. Our intro music is Moose from bensounds.com. You can find more information about the show online at infamouspodcast.com. Or follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Infamous Podcast to stay up to date on the latest news about the show and find out what's going on in the world of comics, movies, TV, and more. We also have a Patreon page, patreon.com/infamouspodcast. We have some great rewards for our patrons, and what we're looking for is help to grow the show to keep bringing you more of the content you want to hear. You can find Johnny on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram as @JohnnyPodorf, and I'm on most social networks as @BrianTudor. So whenever you're listening to us, have a great day, night, evening, weekend, whenever it is, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening. Later.